office with the lights down low and the music turned up. I am spinning in time, trying not to give up, and you're watching me go from the edge of the room, and the color lights pass as it stops on you.
Three down and I am losing steam. speak up. Up. Speak, speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
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 Speak,
speak up.
Up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everybody. This is Danny Nesvetterani, your host for this Tuesday's Speak Up. Thank you all for tuning in this hour up until this point. And I just want to acknowledge that this show, this station, broadcasts on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And with that, I am going to start this episode with some talk content. I was able to produce some interviews last week, and both of them are quite interesting in my opinion. And the first one for today comes from an SFU professor by the name of Majid Bahrami, who works with the Mechatronics Engineering School here at SFU. And he recently, including his research team, unveiled a prototype of this new technology they've been working on that essentially converts waste heat into air conditioning. And according to him, this is very, very revolutionary for a lot of ways, mainly because, again, according to him, waste heat is somewhat of an untapped resource and can really serve, hopefully, to cool buildings in a much more sustainable way than we are currently doing it. So let's take a listen. Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvetterani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On August 12th, Mechatronics Systems Engineering Professor Majid Bahrami with Simon Fraser University unveiled a prototype of a device called the Sorption Heat Transformer and Thermal Storage System, or Sortabo. This new technology converts waste heat found in district heating systems to cooling that can be used for air conditioning in buildings without the need for infrastructure upgrades or electricity. This prototype cooling machine can be seen inside Burnaby City Hall until September 5th of this year. CJSF reached out to Majid Bahrami for an interview about this new prototype, as well as to learn more about why the city of Burnaby decided to display it, and if the city has any plans to expand its use of this technology in the future.
So city of Burnaby is building right now one of the largest district heatings in North America. And they are using a renewable source of waste heat, which is already wasted, is not used. So it's a great, great initiative. So I've been working with the city. And our technology, the idea here is they're digging all the areas in downtown Burnaby, Metro Town, and Edmund Station. And then there would be like five phases, and slowly they're going to expand this. Also to Riverside and other district areas in Metro Vancouver. But with all the investment and this large scale infrastructure, they're going to be only using it for heating, which is like 4 months a year. So our technology, if we can scale it, will not only increase the usefulness of this infrastructure, because it can also provide cooling, it also is going to reduce the amount of time for them to return their investment significantly. So cooling is a lot more expensive. And again, the idea here is you don't need to have your chillers or heat pumps in your building to have cooling. You don't need to worry about the maintenance, the environmental impact, and so on. This is completely sustainable. That's why the city of Burnaby found this, the engineers and the consul there found it interesting.
We then asked Bahrami how long him and his team had been researching this technology until they were able to produce a functional prototype.
So, you know, with our team, we've been working on this for the last 5-10 years. This opportunity will provide us with a much needed location to show the proof of concept. So we built this prototype, installed it in the city hall right now, is operational. So you and your listeners can go and see it in action. It's a small scale, but it shows that, hey, there's no moving part. This machine receives only hot water, the temperature is around 80 degrees centigrade, and create cooling. With no noise, you can actually stand there and feel the cold air blowing in your face, and, you know. So we are very proud to say that this has been, you know, long development coming in the Canadian BC University SFU, and we're hoping to have a huge impact moving forward, not only in BC, but also across Canada and globally.
Later on in the conversation, Bahrami explained why it's taken so long for this technology not only to progress, but to see greater interest from municipalities such as the city of Burnaby.
About 60% of the energy that we generate become waste heat and wasted. So our, I would say, linear economy right now, I'm sure you heard about circular economy. The circular economy, nature doesn't have a waste, right? So everything is gets reused and repurposed. But our economy, we're still just linear. We extract, use, and we just throw away linearly, right? Because so far, we had a lot of resources. Nobody really cared about energy, and the energy has been cheap. And now with the, you know, rise of concern about climate change and environmental impact, you know, and people are more conscious about their footprint, there's a great opportunity. Now, I should mention that this technology, this fundamental solution, this is nothing new. But the principle never really truly commercialized because a variety of reasons. Number one is the older solution had a lot of problems. They were large, inefficient. And also the alternative, which still is, electrically driven systems are convenient, become the mainstream, right? And when the industry does something at the scale, they don't want to change. I mean, even if this, I'm sure you appreciate that, it's they have other issues, right? So they need to address the, you know, ongoing day-to-day issues, you know, respond to their investors and so on. So the current companies, the existing companies, they don't really want to go through all the hassle.
At the end of our conversation, Bahrami stresses the untapped potential of waste heat as a sustainable method of air conditioning.
To me, this is a huge opportunity because waste heat is the largest untapped resource on planet. 60%. I mean, we have so much waste heat. And to give you a number, the city of Burnaby, the facility that they're using the waste heat, this is a garbage incinerator. They have 100 megawatt of waste heat. It may not mean anything to you, but just let me break it down. It's about 2.5 times the heat that the entire city uses, city of Burnaby uses, and the neighborhood. So you have tremendous, just you don't need to burn natural gas or fossil fuel to heat your house. We have waste heat somewhere that is just being wasted. So why not use that, bring it, and this is a wonderful initiative, right?
Once again, that was our conversation with mechatronics system engineering professor of Simon Fraser University, Majid Bahrami, on his new prototype that converts waste heat found in district heating to cooling that can be used for air conditioning. This prototype is open to be seen by the public at Burnaby City Hall until September 5th of this year. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. All right, this is Danny Nesvedarani once again, and that was my segment with Majid Bahrami on his new prototype, which you can see at Burnaby City Hall until September 5th, to see how waste heat is able to be converted into air conditioning. Cool stuff, and, you know, yet to be seen whether it is viable for more widespread commercial use, but if it is, exciting times. Anyways, we have another interview on the way. This one is quite a bit longer, and it's because it covers quite a bit of ground. This is my interview with the QP3338 president, Shaneza Bacchus, who agreed to speak with me because recently there was a slew of layoff notices given to, I believe, 8 staff within the sort of SFSS offices. And that, you know, considering how many positions there currently are, I think it's about 20 or something, if you're not including the layoffs, that's, whether intentional or not, that's a pretty big restructuring. So we thought we would talk to her about her experiences around it. We have reached out to the SFSS for a statement, and I will let you know once we have received it. But until then, here is our interview. It goes into a lot, so keep your ears peeled, I think.
But we received notice at 5:34 p.m. via email regarding the notice of layoffs. In that notice of layoffs, the number of positions were not specified. I was on vacation at the time, and when I returned on July 8th, I replied. That was the first email I sent out. I replied to the employer saying confirming receipt, of course, and that we need time to consult with QP National. And obviously that this was disappointing news to receive. On many fronts, it was disappointing. Because we already had bargaining rescheduled. We had those days established. We had that reestablished as of June 26th. We met with the employer to discuss how to proceed because there had been an unusually lengthy pause between all of our schedules. So we wanted to ensure that we wrap that up and did so efficiently and successfully. So that was the goal for bargaining. So to issue notice of layoffs while bargaining is ongoing is acting in bad faith, is bargaining in bad faith, and it undermines both parties being able to operate freely and fairly. So we're now with both hands tied behind our backs, really, because there's two processes at conflict. There's the bargaining, which is hopefully a collaborative process. And then there is the notice of layoffs, which involves labor adjustment meetings as per the labor code. And that's usually not a collaborative process. Labor, like layoffs are not, it's adversarial, right? And the same players would be in there. So in my head right away, what are the logistics? How are we getting this done? So that's why we needed some time to consult with QP National. So from there, we did meet with them on July 16th. We were very clear that this was not a labor adjustment meeting. It was to understand what the employer was doing and to let them know what QP's position was, which is that both of these processes can't proceed concurrently just by the nature of them, as well as the fact that both parties, the same people on both parties' sides would be the same people in both processes. So it'd be me in bargaining, it'd be me in labor adjustment meetings. It would be the same for the employer, the same people on both sides. Realistically, there's no way to go from one process to the other. And just, yeah, there's no way to have one process versus layoffs going on and then switch to bargaining. It's just not possible. And for QP, SFSS is not the only employer we have to deal with and are responsible to. QP is a composite local of 6 different employers. We have matters going on all the time. We can't devote our entire time for weeks on end to one unit. It just can't happen. The work then piles up for the other units, and it's not fair. We have to manage our workload realistically and fairly. So we did lay all of that out. We also approached it from the point of experience that we have been through a restructure, which is what we consider this at. And at the July 16th meeting, they did let us know how many positions were listed, which was 8. 8 out of 20 is significant. That is a significant reduction in the workforce. As far as QP is concerned, that is a restructure. Whether they want to call it that or not, it doesn't matter. It impacts those employed. It impacts those who are left behind. And having been through this last year, and unfortunately way too recently, which was with SFSS's notice of restructure, and then we had layoffs within BEST, we're quite experienced with how this goes. and how this is proceeding is very contrary to how it should proceed. So we have a big disconnect there. The employer's position was that they could proceed with both the layoffs and bargaining at the same time. So obviously we weren't going to come to an understanding at that July 16th meeting. And then July 17th at around, let me get the exact time right. July 17th, starting at 3:18 p.m., we received by email 5 of the 8 notices of layoffs via email that were sent to the members. So it's a really poor way to deliver these news. And the key piece here is we were not given notice that these layoffs were being sent to the members. I can't stress how and what's the word? I'm lost for words, but it's contrary to acting in good faith. It's very disrespectful. It's unprofessional. And the fact is they have a legal obligation to notify the union when they're laying off individuals, because then we have to schedule meetings with the individuals. I don't know if you want me to go into how like Section 54 of the Labor Code works. I'm happy to do that. It's very process and steps heavy, but it just speaks to the fact that we know how this is supposed to go. So what happened, how it should have gone. Sorry, let me go back to July 17th. So they did that. The emails went out. I saw